was Tori Amos, her version of the Beatles' Happiness is a Warm Gun. Obviously, you know what we're going to be talking about today. God, there's so many aspects of this. Anyway, I'm Paul Rowan. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Good morning. And I'm with Kaz Felix.
Hi, good morning.
My first Wednesday, well, actually not new because you've been on once, and then you were on with Jonathan while I was away, co-host for the first Wednesday show, which is focusing on all aspects of mental health, mental illness, mental liberation. And today we're going to be talking about mental illness and mass shootings, I don't know, as a shorthand.
Yeah, well, I kind of feel like we have to because it gets brought up, you know, that specific way in the media every time this happens. But this time, it was a very blatant statement by President Trump that, you know, mental illness is a motivating cause for mass shootings and that we can start ramping up involuntary confinement of people. I think that's, you know, one of the worst appeals to fear that we could have in the aftermath of a mass shooting. But there's a lot to talk about
and
there.
And the grim history of people being involuntarily confined for many reasons.
Yeah, political.
Inconvenience, political.
Yeah, political repression or any myriad of reasons.
And of course he said directly, I quote, mental illness and hate pulled the trigger. He's got it figured out.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess problem solved.
So we just gotta, well, then we got to do, you know, screenings, you know, prenatal and postnatal screenings for whatever genetic marker for the kind of diverse that whatever might lead to mash. Anyway,
sure, that's not problematic.
So it's a grim situation. This, and then of course Patrick Crucius, interesting name, wrote his strange manifesto or open letter or whatever the heck it is called The Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, that one that was posted to 8chan after the El Paso shooting.
8chan, there is another subject. You know, is anybody else out there, did anybody else not really know? I shouldn't admit these things on the air. I'm supposed to be a well-informed talk show host.
Honestly, it's nice to not know about 8chan, because the more you know about it, the more you know it's just this sort of cesspool for the bad parts of the internet.
And so I did a show, I don't know, like a year and a half, 2 years ago. I think it was around a school shooting, I believe, and I had someone... Or no, it was about the alt-right, you know, and the Pepe the Frog meme.
Oh yeah, a lot of that got started on the Chan boards.
Yeah, and so I did an interview with someone, I believe a woman who was in that realm, you know, had studied, you know, the Gamergate. I think she talked a lot about Gamergate.
Oof.
And 4chan, that was, I didn't know much about that. I didn't know about it's morphing into 8chan, where all the people who are kicked off of 4chan or kicked off the internet from, you know, the Gamergate people, they all went to 8chan.
Right. Yeah, you know, I was also really into computer games when I was a teenager. And so, I mean, I was on different internet forums around that time that were centered around different video games like Fallout and things like that. And if you told me when I was 14 that the rise of fascism was going to start with harassment on gaming forums, I would not have believed that was true.
Of course, we're sort of assuming that, again... Like I assume that maybe everybody knew about 8chan except me and 4chan, and I guess we're assuming that people know about Gamergate. Maybe we'll, you know, it probably does. And as you said, it's a really huge precursor to, strangely, so much that's happening. You know, to what extent they're just sort of coincident, to what extent it's causal, it's all hard to know, but... But well, we should mention something about about that Gamergate. Before, let me just give the number. This is a talk radio show.
Oh, yes. Let's
kind
put
of a free-flowing conversation today. And we welcome your participation to talk about this these latest horrific mass shootings, the psychology, the extent we can plummet from the outside, from the little that we know, and the general milieu around it all, and the dire political and ecological situation we're in. That's all to be discussed today. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in. Yeah, so go. It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously of a very different generation. I'm 60. You're quite a bit younger. You obviously are way more versed in all this stuff. I never played video games except for, I think, Asteroids and Pac-Man, because they came out when I was in college. The first video games came out when I was in college, and they were in this one, like, I don't know if there's a, it was some kind of game room, and they added the first video games. This is like even my sophomore year in college, and this is literally the beginning. And then, that Pong game, whatever that's called.
Yeah.
So those were literally the first.
I think I played that on DOS, like the first time we got like Windows 3.1.
So that's all I know about. And then I never, followed any of it. But you're obviously of a generation that has grown up way more with that. So you have a lot more to say about this than I do.
Yeah. Well, I'm that sort of in-between generation where, I didn't have the internet or smartphones my whole life. But then when I was like about 13, we got internet at home, and you had to unplug the phone cord and plug that into your computer. And then if someone called you, you would get kicked off the internet. So that was like my generation. But internet gaming forums were sort of a different thing in the late 90s, and they were not radicalized in the way that, like, the angry young men on the internet are pretty easily radicalized now.
So, yeah, so the whole Gamergate comes down to the fact that there is young women, I think, mainly young women, who are, like, aghast, disgusted at the toxic masculinity, right? So omnipresent in the whole gamer culture, the male hero violence, gun trigger, misogyny that obviously they're playing out their sick adolescent fantasies or whatever. But anyway, so there's attempts to, introduce some other elements, probably like even a 0.001% is maybe all they're asking for in the beginning, to have a different presence, right? And there was this huge reaction against that.
I think because there's a lot of new indie game developers now, they're starting to make more games that have female main characters or just different cultural perspectives. Like, I know there's been a lot of backlash about including characters in games that are gay or are transgender. Those games have done really well with their niche audiences. But then there's all this backlash from these young men who are like, why are you politicizing our games by including this gay character? How dare you? And Gamergate really started as an organized harassment campaign of female game developers. But I mean, once you have people that are organized to dox and harass people, you can use that for a lot of other more nefarious political reasons, too.
Well, we have a caller, Helen. Why don't we just finish that thought before we go to Helen? Just hang on for just another second. So then some of these, what are they called? The 4chan.
Chan boards.
The Chan boards.
Yeah, they're
kind of developed
forums.
As a forum for many different things, but a lot of those people, it became used as a forum for Gamergate, and as a way to sort of coordinate or consolidate or whatever, aggregate this harassment campaign.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you have like this group of anonymous people on the internet that are coordinated in harassing people who they view as political figures.
And then they get kicked off of 4chan.
Yeah.
And they all go to this new thing, which was...
They made a new board, when the moderators kicked them off of 4chan because they were kind of tired of the Gamergate stuff still being talked about constantly. And they were like, you guys really need to stop. They kicked them off, and that's how 8chan was formed, by the very worst parts of 4chan.
And that's where this guy's manifesto, and probably, you know, I can only assume a lot of his... I mean, that's why I assume that a certain number of these mass shooters, these sort of people who mutate in a really dark, bad direction, the mutation happens partly through sort of like this insularity and sort of like not really maybe what I feel like maybe not really having like real conversations and checks and balances, you know, in real life with people. They're actually like go into these dark corners of the internet and sort of get enabled in their whatever disease direction that their mind is going in. So
it's very sick. It's a sick place. But we got a lot of callers.
Okay,
but yeah, if I don't recommend ever like spending a lot of time reading the Chan boards. There's a lot of racism. There's a lot of misogyny. There's a lot of incel ideology, which is the involuntarily celibate people who think that it's like women's fault for not sleeping with them. So there's just all kinds of toxic stuff on there.
All right, well, let's go to Helen as first up. You're on the air.
Hi. 8chan is coming from the Philippines, and the guy who had it, it's like he was pretty amazing because he was totally crippled. I mean, in
a wheelchair, the founder. The founder of 8chan?
Yeah. But I'd read about him some time before because I think he was also on the stock market. I think he was very, very smart. And then what he did is he sold it to somebody else. And just yesterday, that guy was very good because he closed it down. So I just want you to know that.
They did close 8chan down.
Yeah.
Well, what I was reading about was they shut down Cloudflare, which was the service that was... DDoS protection, which is denial of service attacks, are, you know, you can basically shut down internet traffic to a website by attacking it with data. And Cloudflare protects your website from that. And Cloudflare said they were going to stop protecting 8chan. So I think the website has been up and down because people have been, you know, trying to shut it down by attacking it with. They have different programs to hack it. I know that there's also similar things with spin-off boards from 4chan. There's another one called Kiwi Farms that I think has been shut down by DDoS attacks.
Well, I don't on the picture of the second guy who had bought it from the other guy, and he said he was closing it down. So
that's
maybe
great.
You know more.
No,
maybe
that's great.
Know more.
I hope that it goes away for good. I know
it sounds like Helen. You sounds like you have the latest news.
Yeah, I did not know that news. I hope it stays down.
Yesterday. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen.
And all right. Well, that's one thing. Hopefully, have less. Breed less toxicity as a result of that. Well, let's just go to our second caller. We got Sean. You're up on the air. Go ahead. Our next caller, Sean.
Oh, I guess still there?
Wait. No. There? Okay.
Okay. Well, you can call back if we lost you.
Or maybe
by accident.
We've got a new engineering training and. She's just sort of getting used to the board. That could be it, or it could be that Sean
can
is gone.
Me?
Oh.
No, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, great. yesterday, I finally heard Greg Palast. He was being interviewed by Tom Hartman, and they were talking about the whole situation in which you have this downwardly mobile segment of society, people who are like formerly middle class. And hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay.
What?
So Greg Palast was talking about this downwardly mobile segment of society and an economy that's basically winner-take-all with virtually no social safety net whatsoever. And it really harkened back. It reminded me of Michael Moore's film Bowling for Columbine, where he talked about, you know, it had nothing to do with rates of gun ownership. It had nothing to do with race. It was all about an economic system, a way of life in which it's a winner take all. There's no social safety net. He went up to Canada. He went up to BC. He was walking into people's apartments because they don't even lock their doors. So in societies with very low economic inequality, they are vastly safer than societies in which you have this extreme economic inequality where it's winner take all. If you have trouble in life and you fall through their cracks, you're doomed, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates this kind of nihilistic violence that is cultivated by this winner take all situation. And Greg Palast and Michael Moore seem to hit it on the head. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Yeah, well, I think nihilistic violence is a pretty apt description of what we're seeing. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point about how capitalism and that extreme economic inequality has an impact. I don't know if we're getting into the statements made in that long manifesto.
Well, it's interesting because he does
talk about that a little.
Well, he's got, I mean, I'd like to know if people have read this, and I unfortunately could not find a simple direct link to this thing. I think it's being taken down all over the internet, you know, I guess for good reasons and maybe also not good reasons, because I think people really should read this. Obviously, they don't want to encourage people who, you know, copycat, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a political situation, and we have to address it also politically. You know, anyway. So he does talk about political reasons, economic reasons. You know, he blames
Definitely,
corporations.
Yeah.
He blames corporations as like the main, you know, the main overall. He kind of sets. He has a kind of a systemic analysis.
Right. It starts out. You think it's going to be about something else. I mean, because he starts talking about sort of anti-capitalist ideas, but then there's a great deal of, you know, white supremacy and hatred towards other groups in there also.
Well, that's his easy out. Instead of coming to the inevitable conclusion that, yes, you know, the corporations and their political, aides, enablers, are the system in which, you know, rampant corporate control and political corruption is the status quo. And where the environment is being destroyed, as he talks, you know, extensively about, he acknowledges climate change. He talks about the devastating impact of pollution, of, as he calls it, shamelessly over-harvesting resources. He even mentions the Lorax. He says watersheds around the country, especially in agriculture areas, are being depleted. Fresh water is being polluted from farming and oil drilling operations. Consumer culture is creating thousands of tons of unnecessary plastic waste and electronic waste, et cetera, et cetera. But then he comes to this conclusion that the real problem is more immigrants coming into the country
to use up resources,
which is interesting because back in the day of, you know, the heyday of Earth First, that was something that some main figures of Earth First were sort of either explicitly saying or implying, and it became a big, you know, big controversy, rightfully so.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
it's not an uncommon thing within, you know, the American mentality that, you know, obviously people on both the right and the left are gonna go in that direction because that's in the air we breathe. But
yeah,
it just seems such a cowardly cop out to me, because it just seems like you're not really thinking things through. If you have that kind of analysis and then you say, oh, the real problem is that these borders are too open, and then your solution is you're actually gonna try to reduce them by individually killing them. It seems like
it's horrible.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And it's a It seems like a failure of thought and of courage to me, as much as any a moral failing and a failing of basically, well, and a failing of having enough of a political culture. Obviously, he's not getting other checks and balances and influences, which is the problem. Which is we've got these. Which is going back to what you're saying, the insularity of that culture, of the Gamergate culture, which is, and the insularity of sort of the, you know, toxic masculine culture, the NRA, you know, these inner sanctums where people are able to maintain their power and their, frankly, insane beliefs and hold on to them, cling on to them desperately. It seems to be what's going on.
Yeah, and they're being validated by each other, which is also really dangerous. I mean, I would say I agree that, you know, I think that white supremacist thought is a failure of courage, because instead of, you know, looking at those conditions, which are true, those conditions of, you know, climate change is real, and, you know, the environment we live in is being horribly polluted and there's runaway effects happening as a result of that. You know, instead of taking those premises and saying like, oh, well, actually we should look at the people that are consuming the most resources and that are controlling these corporations like oil industries. Instead, you know, it's that the easy out of just blaming a group of people that looks different from you.
And it's the same old, same old. It's like the origin of white supremacy through, you know, the color-coded system and the slavery system, the you know, the giving, basically the co-opting the poor whites of the South, or in general the United States, in basically giving them the opportunity to be one up on, you know, first African American slaves, and then, you know, after slavery, not
right.
slaves anymore, and then the, you know, Italian immigrants or whatever. It's that tier
right.
system that basically is what created the whole white supremacy system, right?
Yeah, and I think that you'll find in like white supremacist culture and just sort of the culture of 8chan and Gamergate, there's really an urge to dominate that is not present as much with anti-capitalist culture and, you know, organizing culture of activists. At least, hopefully, we're working on tempering that urge to dominate, you know, which is sort of a cultural thing in the United States. But they really just embrace that in white supremacist culture, that, like, you have to be on top, you know, because of... you were born with white skin, therefore you have to dominate. And they really embrace that, and they view that as part of their masculinity as well.
Well, it looks like Corey, I think, has been waiting the longest. Can we get Corey up?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I'll be brief. The guy in Dayton, they keep stating that he used a military-style weapon. They keep stating that, and I'm a veteran, light infantry. I saw that drum that he used. We never use anything like that in the military. That's not meant for hunting. That's not meant for sport. That's meant to kill other human beings. Being in the infantry, we used to have magazines, but nothing like that. We're light infantry. We're supposed to go from one place to the other. If you look at that drum, that's not something we would use. So I think more veterans need to speak up. And be like, hey, stop saying that these are military-style weapons. This has nothing to do with the military. These are guys who are out there buying these adapted weapons to kill people.
So basically,
the NRA is culpable. And I think, like I said, more veterans need to speak out, because once I saw that drum, I'm like, wait a minute. How would, even as an infantry member, that's not feasible to run around with something like that. It's meant to kill human beings. And also, I think the media, and I'm here, I keep hearing that on the media, MSNBC, CNN, I've heard it on cable, and I'm just like, this isn't a military-style weapon, this is something that has nothing to do with the military, this has something so a person can kill civilians as quickly as possible. So I just wanted to say that, and I'll see you guys.
Wait a second, hold on a second, because it seems like what you're saying, if I'm hearing you, is essentially these weapons are basically being manufactured for either mass shooter or fantasized mass shooter scenarios.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I mean, as a military member, when I saw that, I'm like, wait a minute. How is this a military-style weapon? That's nothing that I've ever seen. Huh. And, yeah, I've been out of the Army for a long time, but I still, you know, keep up to date with stuff. I haven't seen anything like that. No, that's nothing that we would use. That's nothing that any special forces unit would use, any, you know, just regular grunt like me. They're being manufactured to kill human beings, and people need to start saying that. Like I said, veterans like me, I'm calling you guys from Houston, Texas. I've already called KPFT here in Houston. I'm calling you guys from KBOO because my people are still there in Portland. But yeah, we just need to start saying, you know, what it is. And like I said, and also with the media being culpable, you got three things going on. You got people, you know, white people who I think are woke. They totally get it. That's why I love KBOO. And you have people that just, hey, if you're MAGA, I equate you to being a racist. But then you have this other group that just feel like they're above it all, that they just, you know, since it doesn't affect them, they, you know, Trump's a racist, but I'm not going to do anything about it or say anything about it. And I think that's just being just as culpable. If you didn't think that Donald Trump was a racist, you know, 3.5 years ago, people of color knew what was about to happen. This is we're not surprised at this. So I think that culpable group, you know, upsets me even more because they feel like they're above it all. But no, because it's not affecting them. I'm a large black male. I'm not scared, but I still, you know, I'm still cognizant of just going out in public because I don't want to scare the wrong person because they might shoot me.
Wow. Hey, thanks for calling.
No, appreciate it. Talk to you guys later.
All right.
Yeah, all the way from Texas.
Wow. I guess we could have asked him more about since he's, you know, in Texas and it happened down there. But anyway, wow.
That was a really informative call, though. Yes. Thank you.
And that blows my mind, that point he made. That's, and again, yeah, more veterans. So that's a call out to veterans. I'm not, but okay, well, let's just go to Edie after that. I don't have anything more to say. Edie, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I can barely hear you on my end. I first started calling you talking about the progression of games and gaming. And while I want to emphasize that more, it doesn't in any way excuse culpability for Trump, Republicans, corporations, you know, pushing this whole idea of the other that we can justify blaming for our problems and then that violence is somehow excusable when it's not. But I noticed that when I was riding on Amtrak, on the lower level, there was a room that was for those who couldn't go up and down the stairs, disabilities, but they weren't making enough money off of that. So they instead use those rooms for these game machines that you put money into. And in order to induce folks, then have a series of escalating violent short video games. And it start out with something really innocuous like the Pac-Man. And then it would get a minute or whatever it was. Then it would go to something where it's a little bit more an animal that you're shooting. And then it became a person. And then it became people who were in military garb attacking you, representing whatever was that vilified country or religion. And then it came to women in bikinis, you know, attacking you that you had to shoot. Anyway, it came from it just being a game and it's not connected to humanity to getting more used to using the same kill 'em, shoot 'em up, even though they look human, and then in the process of dehumanizing the humanity. The biggest developer of computer games, until recently I haven't been paying attention, but for decades, it was the U.S. Army. And the purpose of that was to cross that violate that barrier of our understanding our shared humanity and empathy, and that barrier against murder. And so it was excused by, we just need to have hand-eye coordination. But the real purpose in their marketing within themselves, you know, different corporations, that was the change of psychology to get boys who felt so insecure and inadequate that they would retaliate against the other, and the other being female and brown or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the thrill and addiction to blowing up or killing someone, as seen in the general laughing at a video of Strikes hitting around a truck trying to escape, and then blowing up the truck and saying, isn't this beautiful, or big explosions over a city with tens of thousands of people being terrorized, maimed, burned, and murdered, saying, isn't the sky beautiful, like a fireworks display. So I was seeing just on Amtrak four children who would be with a parent they're traveling with who has disabilities, or others, the innocuous gaming that was not innocuous at all. It was very, very carefully designed. So back in the 70s, when I was working on a master's degree on computers, we were trying to develop games that would be less addictive, but that would also be more constructive. But the U.S. Army was putting the kibosh on that because they wanted to use that exclusively for that mentality. Mm-hmm. And TRS-80 and Atari and others started fighting the resistance to hold people accountable for the consequences that was very well documented in the dehumanizing that, because it increased profiteering for gun manufacturers and biochemical warfare.
Interesting. So, you know, we were obviously talking about sort of the, you know, the whatever, the a lower level of you know, not lower level, but, you know, just the, you know, people caught in mass culture, not like the bigger forces involved in we're talking about the people who are on 8chan, the Gamergate people who are sort of caught up in this, you know, who get caught up in these huge flows of in their own blocked flows of energy or whatever. But did you know much about this the broader context of the development of video games?
That's... A little bit. I mean, I didn't know all that history, but I know that there have been a lot of first-person shooter type games that have received funding from the Army because, I mean, they, like, actually playing games like Call of Duty is, at least from my high school friend who's a veteran, he says that it's encouraged to play games like that in your downtime. They, like, you know, they have Xboxes that the Army supplies to people, you know, to use when you're not, like, out in the field, you know, having been, like, deployed in actual combat. They do encourage you to play video games and stuff like that in your downtime.
It's interesting. I actually, a good friend of mine from back in my younger soccer playing days went to work for TRW. God, this would be in the 70s. And I remember he was an early computer whiz, mathematics computer, and he was working on, you know, warfare simulation stuff. So obviously that whole, all the software, you know, warfare simulation, you know, the whole training for combat, all that stuff, it all morphs into the development of, wow, yeah, that's a whole area that I'm sure there's scholarship and books written about. But Edie has...
What was the name of the person who, I want to say Card. I think he wrote the book Ender's Game, like he started...
Oh, yeah, Orson Scott Card, yeah.
When he was 10 or 13, started writing it, spent a lot of time. Anyway, he wrote this book about how these kind of games were developed, and then how it could have mentality, and people just thought it was a game, not knowing it was real. But... he was tapped. he had written this on his own, just he had spent years working on this sort of stuff and this mentality. But then he was tapped by the U.S. government afterwards, and his plans on how they could have hegemony for the New World Order for the control, because in the 1940s, when they were developing the nuclear bomb, the intelligence agencies of the United Kingdom, United States, Germany, I forgot the two other countries were. They were all saying that actually worse than nuclear is climate change due to fossil fuel development that is primarily driven by the U.S. military
That's right.
To get control over the fossil fuel and to destroy water. So the whole thing was known in the 40s, and trying to find ways to use what they call force multipliers. If you have one simple weapon that is dehumanized, like the drones and the ELF and the different things that would create earthquakes and storms and things, they would have just a few people involved, so they're not stopped like in this.
We're really going far afield here, and I think we're
okay. But the whole point is about holding up, that we don't go into the other, you know, thinking they are the other. We can have contempt for them because there's this the incels and others saying we want to be seen as worthy and good and respected and have our needs met too, instead of finding easy scapegoats and a violent solution, which isn't really a solution.
Well, that you brought it back around admirably.
Yeah, so that's great.
So well done, and thank you. And we do have another caller. I just wanted to take a breath here. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your regular host, Paul Roland. I have with me my first Wednesday co-host, Kaz Felix, who has been part of this very stimulating conversation today, I must say.
There's a lot to talk about here.
We've just touched a few of the points we wanted to touch, but that's okay. Hopefully we've stimulated your thoughts and further conversations. It'd be so nice to follow this up with like a public conversation. I've been meaning to take that step for probably about 5 years now. Maybe we could do that. Maybe at the Social Justice Action Center. That's why I wanted to have a kind of a follow-up conversation to on air. But anyway, that's just a thought. Anybody out there who's interested, you could get me through the website. At Wednesday Talk Radio, there's a way to email me if you just follow the steps. So we've talked about, we haven't talked about Steve Bannon and that context for how he's bringing together all these elements similar people, like the people who either pulling the strings or they're the puppets who are, you know, having their strings pulled like this. You know, I can only see him as a pathetic, tragic figure. I can only see these shooters because, you know, none of them are rich, obviously. That's why, you know, they wouldn't be in that position if they were.
Right. You know, well, and maybe they could have, gone a different way in life if they didn't spend so much time getting radicalized in these echo chambers online. Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, maybe he was already someone who had some racist beliefs, but you spend time on the internet in those places and it will ruin your life.
Well,
because they're so antisocial, it's awful.
And he said he didn't even quote think of Hispanics as being his target until he read The Great Replacement.
Right, which is a theory, sort of a white supremacist theory, which Steve Bannon also believes in, and Richard Spencer.
And which is the idea that's why in Charlottesville they went chanting with their stupid tiki torches, they will not replace us, Jews will not replace us. This idea that George Soros and company are, you know, who was behind, of course, the caravan coming up from Central America, as we all know. I'm being ironic for anybody who doesn't realize that that there's these, you know, some people take in the direction of the great Jewish banker conspiracy. Some people look at it as some other analysis, but that there's forces that are manipulating things, you know, probably the United Nations, such that they're encouraging all this immigration in order to basically replace the, which is ridiculous because it's a, because the
right.
White supremacy is part of the prevailing structure. So why would they be trying to, you know, replace the
white
the
race,
shock troops of their system,
yeah,
with, you know, it's obviously a disease thinking, but that's the theory, that there's this great, it came from this guy in France, ironically named Camus, Renaud Camus, who wrote a book in 2011, The Great Replacement, which basically says that attribute this process to intentional policies advanced by global and liberal elites, i.e. the replaces, to basically replace, you know, white European, or in this case American, populations with, you know, in the case of Europe, mainly Muslims from Northern Africa and from Sub-Saharan Africa and others. Anyway, there's no time to really go into that now, but that's
right. That is the underlying belief that a lot of white supremacists have. And I think you'll see that it comes from this fear that they have that, you know, we're as white people, we are in danger, you know, supposedly of losing power. And I mean, it's that sense of being threatened, they think, excuses mass violence towards other groups of people.
And of course, it goes back to what we were saying earlier, which is this bedrock thing of American culture, which is, you know, due to slavery and the invasion of indigenous lands and genocide, which is, well, the inability
right.
to acknowledge guilt and history, and the idea that we actually have replaced them. And he says that in his first paragraph, that the Indians, that some people would say he's hypocritical because European Americans replaced Native Americans.
Or they tried, I mean, to wipe them out completely.
Well, we did, you know, essentially largely replace, but not, obviously not completely, and we certainly haven't succeeded anyway.
I sort of wonder if that's why this happens more in the United States, because, you know, the country itself was founded on that genocide, that maybe that influences people's thinking that, like, oh, other groups are trying to commit genocide against us, which is false.
Well,
but maybe that's where that comes
from.
Well,
that white genocide, I think it came initially most strongly from South Africa. So obviously the parallels between South Africa and the United States. No,
yeah.
I think so. I think in various ways. I think there's sort of this worm at the heart, unless you actually acknowledge it, like I think we have, you know, shed some light on it. If you don't, if it's unacknowledged, there's this unacknowledged guilt that that creates cognitive dissonance, and you can see it. You can see it clearly, cognitive dissonance in this. And I think that cognitive dissonance leads you in the path of least resistance, which is instead of confronting the real.
Right. Instead of confronting the ultra-rich people that are consuming the most resources on the planet, then instead you're saying, oh, these, you know, working-class brown people are actually the problem. You know, it's very twisted how you can say that climate change is real, but you're not looking at, our previous caller mentioned, the U.S. military is the world's top producer of carbon, because they use so much fuel for war machines. But we're not looking at that. We're looking at just other folks that are working class with brown skin. And it's really twisted how a lot of that ideology is really popular in certain corners of the internet.
I think we've lost Joseph, unfortunately, who probably waited patiently through our...
Sorry about that, Joseph.
Mostly my ranting here. But Well, I wanted to read a little bit from this, the mental disease of late stage capitalism, because it rings a very kind of positive note. But we do have George now waiting, so we should go to him. Hello, George. George? Oh. Well, George lost patience with us as well. Sorry about that,
sorry,
Joseph,
folks.
And George. But okay, so I'm just going to, I don't know, I think this is such a wonderful article. I don't know who Joe Brewer is. He has kind of some interesting stuff. I looked into it. You know, he's just a person like you and me who wants to say what he needs to say, and we should take a... Anyway, so I'm just going to read a few paragraphs. He starts out by saying, "You are supposed to feel shame when it's not your fault. I've been talking with a lot of my friends recently in private where they felt comfortable letting their guard down about the dirty little secret no one is supposed to talk about. The shame people feel when they can't get a job, find a job, or pay their bills, or go to the dentist, or that they have to move back in with their parents, or they can't afford to have children, or I would add that they, you know, at the end of that list, they end up houseless, or worse, that yes, or have this is a show that ostensibly is talking about mental health and mental illness, or find yourself with a, quote, mental illness. There's a shame in a lot of stuff. Anyway, we're supposed to pretend in this stupendously individualist culture that is our fault. The buck stops here. I am responsible for my failings in life. Of course, this is demonstrably not true. We are merely living through late-stage capitalism, and our parents lack the foresight to warn us about it. When a population explodes, as the human one did throughout the last century, eventually all manner of social institutions become overcrowded. From there, it's simply a numbers game. Well, there's some stuff to discuss about that. But anyway, I just really like where he takes this, which is a great irony of this deeply corrupt system of wealth hoarding is that the weapon of choice is how we feel about ourselves as we interact with our friends. The elites don't have to silence us. We do that ourselves by refusing to talk about what is happening to us. Fake it until you make it. That's the choice we are given by the already successful who have pigeonholed themselves into the tiny number of real opportunities society had to offer. Hold yourself accountable for the crushing political system that was designed to divide us against ourselves. This great lie that we whisper to ourselves is how they control us. Our fear that other impoverished people, which is most of us now, will look down on us for being impoverished too. This is how we give them the power to keep humiliating us. I say no more of this emotional racket. If I am going to be responsible for my fate in life, let it be because I chose to stand up and fight, that I helped dismantle the global architecture of wealth extraction that created the systemic corruption of our economic and political systems. I would say they're corrupt to begin with, but now more than ever, we need spiritual healing. As this capitalist system destroys itself, we can step aside and find healing by living honestly and without fear. They don't get to tell us how we live. We can share our pain with family and friends. We can post it on social media, shout it from the rooftops if we feel like it. The pain we feel is capitalism dying. It hurts us because we are still in it. Anyway, capitalism dying, whether it's in the death throes or whether it's just killing everything that feeds it, which I think is more likely. In any case, I like that. I came back from my vacation in Italy energized because I got to do these amazing hikes in this valley, which maybe I'll get to talk about sometime. Got to explore this really magical system of old trails and stuff. And I don't know, it's just wonderful because it's so different from being sort of somewhat trapped in the channels of city living, you know, like, you know, the streets and the grid and everything laid out. So anyway, I felt like I kind of got back some of my joy of living, and I feel that's what he's saying, and that's, you know, that's the only response we got, really, I think.
Yeah. We probably have time for one more caller.
Oh, we do
we
have
got one
Rodrigo.
More.
Sorry, I didn't see that. I was looking down. Go ahead, Rodrigo. You're on the air.
Oh, no. Did we just lose him? Did we lose Rodrigo?
My bad. Sorry, Rodrigo. If I had stopped a couple...
I don't think he was up there for very long, but I'm sorry we lost you, Rodrigo, because we're very close to 9 a.m. here. We just have a couple minutes left. Before we wrapped up, I wanted to say that, you know, there's going to be a lot of... there's going to be a lot of coverage in the media about whether or not mass shootings are the result of mental illness. I just wanted to say, you know, I think that that is... an easy way to frame it because it avoids these discussions about white supremacy and the history of the United States. I think that when you're saying, oh, this shooter was just mentally ill, you're saying that that this type of violence is exceptional when it's not really. I mean, this is a fairly common occurrence in the United States. It's not really an exceptional occurrence. And it's really doubling down on our fears of the other. In this case, the other is people that have mental illness. But, you know, like Paul was saying about the shooter took an easy way out, saying that, oh, the other is to blame and I'm going to blame these brown immigrants. I think the same thing goes for blaming mental illness or mentally ill people for mass shootings. That I think that's an easy way out.
Yeah, well, I mean, the statistically, they say that, you know, well, and then how do you define
who mental is illness? Mentally you know, ill and who's not?
These are the kind of questions, another whole set of questions that we weren't able to get into, but that's okay. But yeah, I mean, this show does explore all these different, you know, from a political and social lens, and the whole idea of, you know, the whatever the disease is, being something in our society, our culture, our politics, our economics, I think you would agree, the main thrust of kind of what we're trying to get at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that unfortunately, it gets manifested in individuals, and unfortunately, some of the most vulnerable. Because, you know, let's face it, you know, there are many different categories of vulnerable people. One of whom is, you know, young marginalized males who hang out in these 8chan channels.
Yeah.
That is a vulnerable population that we need to recognize.
Yeah, I mean, they're very vulnerable to being radicalized by people that are already very far to the right fascist who are looking to recruit.
Indeed. Well, with that, we got to wrap it up. Thank you, Kaz. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Claire, our new board op. Appreciate it. Good work. And we'll talk at you in a month.
All right. We'll see you next month.
And programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements.